You are listening to Radio Aryan.
And welcome to Aryan Britannia. Today's date is Monday the 13th of May 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioaryan.com. Well, I'm very pleased to say that I do have my co-host with me today, Max Musson from Western Spring. Max, how are you doing today? It's a lovely day here. What's it like where you are?
Yeah, it's been a lovely day here as well. Actually, we've had sunshine most of the day. In fact, it's been a really good weekend. We did have the odd few showers, but generally speaking, it's been glorious sunshine, and it seems like summer's here, and it just makes you feel good, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's nice to have good weather. It's nice to have lots of exciting stuff to talk about as well with the European Union elections. I mean, I've partially been thinking that, you know, we'd have missed these EU elections if we didn't have them, because we don't really have any other chance to get populist parties elected, get populist parties in front of the media, get them interviewed and have a chance for them to actually win an election where they have sort of proportional representation, and then they can get money from the EU. And we'd be missing all that if we had our Brexit. Of course, if we had our Brexit, we wouldn't be we would no longer be beholden to the EU. So I think both of those outcomes are positive for us. So I am feeling quite positive at the moment, and I'm enjoying the European Union election. And we're going to get into that a little bit later on in the podcast. But one topic that has come up just recently that I thought we should maybe talk about a little bit was these threats, the so-called threats to MPs. Because there's a lot of double standards that are going on here. And this first report that I've got is from the BBC. Threats to MPs are at unprecedented levels, Metropolitan Police Commissioner Cresta Dick has said. The Met chief disclosed that the number of crimes reported by MPs more than doubled in 2018 from 151 to 342, and was on course to rise further this year. Assistant Commissioner Neil Basu told a parliamentary committee Brexit was a huge driver behind the increase. Women and people from ethnic minorities were being disproportionately targeted, Ms. Dick added. So far this year, MPs and staff have already reported 152 crimes and over 600 incidents, while incidents involving MPs are now 126% higher than in 2015. Well, that sounds really shocking, doesn't it? Hundreds of crimes that are being reported by these MPs. Sorry, Max, what were you going to say there?
I'm just saying, yeah, it does sound shocking. It's MPs are very good at making these sort of things sound shocking.
They are. But the thing is, I went and had a look at another article, because there was another article to do with this, and they said a Freedom of Information request by the BBC shows that 142 offences were reported to the unit in 2017, but these included 90 offences related to malicious communications, such as threats via social media, email or telephone, as well as harassment and assault. In 2018, that increased to 270 offences, with the figures showing the number of reports of malicious communications to the police doubled. So basically, three quarters of all of those so-called crimes were just people making criticisms on social media. They weren't actual physical crimes. They weren't physical assaults. Three quarters of that is just exasperated people in the public that have no other way to make their feelings heard, because the politicians just aren't listening. So they end up making extreme criticism, we could say. They end up using language which maybe they wouldn't use otherwise, but they end up using strong language to criticize these politicians, and they have hysteria over it. And these death threats, I suspect they're along the lines of treason used to be punished by hanging, or politicians, they should all be tried and sent to the gallows, that sort of thing. I doubt very much whether there are any actual credible threats here. So we got a huge amount of exaggeration.
I think a lot of this is a spin-off from the campaigns that have been waged by the Community Security Trust, the Jewish organisation that comments upon threats to the Jewish community, and they have reported year on year large increases in the number of anti-Semitic attacks, and their figures, that they sound very alarming until you realise that their definition of attack can mean a statement that is in some way critical of Jews, and so therefore it then renders the actual concept of an attack virtually useless from the point of view of actually gauging how much what threats of violence there are, because in a great many cases there aren't threats of violence, there are just people saying unkind things. And I would imagine that that the MPs that are reporting all these threats to them and all these crimes are probably reporting people saying unkind things to them far more than they would like to let on. They try to give the impression that there are lots and lots of attacks against them, but in reality I would imagine, as you've just sort of hinted, that a lot of this is just people saying unkind things.
Well, you can imagine people getting furious at the fact that nothing was done about these grooming gangs, and the politicians have done nothing about it. They've tried to cover it up, they've tried to hide it, and you can imagine people saying, you know what, you deserve to be groomed and raped if you think that this is acceptable. So people saying things like that, and that's what it is. That's what people have been saying to these MPs, and what they don't seem to understand is the power differential, the fact that they are politicians, they are untouchable, they're supposed to be representing us, and they're saying that somehow somebody typing on keyboard at home, some working class guy that is miles away from them, has no other way to make his frustrations heard. And somehow him typing on a keyboard is a threat to them, and they feel intimidated by that. Well, if they don't want to be intimidated by the electorate, maybe they should try actually doing things that are to benefit the electorate. Maybe they should try actually listening to people like Tommy Robinson, people like Gerard Batten, people that are trying to stand up for the working class and stand up for the white majority in Britain, instead of just trying to censor us all the time and trying to silence us. That's all they have to do. And then people wouldn't be criticising them. People would be saying, well done, that's great that you've done this. Look at the mess they've made of Brexit. Look at the way that we're having the EU election 3 years after voting to leave. I mean, people are understandably frustrated about this. They're absolutely furious about it. And the only way that they can make their anger felt, often, is just by leaving a message on Twitter or leaving a message on Facebook. They don't have the time to take off work and go and protest outside the Houses of Parliament. And what do you do when the politicians don't listen to you? What can you do apart from just, increase the sort of level of anger in the tweets that you send to them? That really, they should be pleased that they can have this interaction with us now that's been brought about by the age of the internet, because it wasn't there before.
And of course, the politicians over the last sort of several decades have created a far more divided society than we ever had in the past. And once you start creating a divided society where there are clear clefts between one particular demographic group and another, then it increases the amount of extremism that takes place, because once you create a multicultural society and a multiracial society, then there are all sorts of different ethnic groups and racial groups, etc., that are all competing for the finite resources that society has to offer, and people become that much more aggressive because they're in competition all the time, and that tends to make people feel more strongly about things, and that's why we're getting the extremism now that never used to exist in British politics. And it's all been created by the politicians, and now they're reaping the harvest from that, in that people view them far more aggressively than they used to view politicians in the past. Politicians in the past used to be able to walk down their high street and used to be able to walk amongst crowds of people, and they might get a bit of jeering, they might get a bit of heckling. But nowadays, if you If you're confronted by your political opponents, very often that confrontation with your political opponents involves a very real physical threat from them if you come face to face in the street. And that's been created by the politicians that we've got. And they've got to recognise that, and they've got to try and create a society where there are fewer divisions. And the way to do that is to reduce the degree of multiculturalism within our society, and to start reversing the multicultural experiment that they've been foisting upon us over recent decades.
Well, I think the point you brought up there, the Community Security Trust and this Tel Mama and anti-Semitism and so-called Islamophobia and hate speech, I think they want to expand that to include politicians, which I don't think they're going to have very much luck with. But what they have said they're going to do, ministers have said they intend to pass a law creating a specific new electoral offence of intimidating parliamentary candidates and party campaigners during the run-up to an election. The government says the offence has been developed to crack down on intimidating or abusive behaviour, which is, in extreme cases, already punishable with a custodial sentence. I mean, can they not see the hypocrisy in that? They want to make a specific new law to prevent people intimidating parliamentary candidates and party campaigners during the run-up to an election. And what have we got going on right now? We've got the EU election. We've got Carl Benjamin from UKIP, who's been thumped. He's had his mobile phone smashed out of his hand. He's had people try to attack him, tell him he's not allowed to set foot in Bristol. And you've got Tommy Robinson with milkshakes being thrown at him, punches being thrown at him, people attacking him. And you've got MPs cheering this on, celebrating this, encouraging it. You've got editors of the newspapers, they've been encouraging it, particularly the chief editor at the Daily Mirror. They are all encouraging this. And then you've got these MPs, the very ones who are encouraging this against their opposition, who are saying, well, we need a new law to arrest the people that are doing this and encouraging it. And if the law is applied equally, then that will mean that these MPs themselves should be in the dock for intimidating the opposition. I mean, it says parliamentary candidates here, so of course that must include the European Union Parliament as well. And they don't seem to have any capability for self-reflection to actually look at their own actions here. That they are the ones that are encouraging this against people that are out there campaigning at the moment. Proper physical violence. I mean, this milkshake that was thrown at Tommy Robinson, that could have been anything. There could have been acid in that. There could have been ammonia in that. There could have been any kind of chemical weapon that was in that milkshake. And now that they've made that acceptable, they said, oh, that's okay. Then, you know, if somebody does get thrown with this milkshake, they could think that that's all it is. And it could be this acid. And everybody around will just be thinking, oh, no, it's just milkshake. It's just milk or whatever. You know, what are you making the fuss about? I mean, this is horrific that this is going on in supposedly free country where we're supposed to be able to speak about anything. We are supposed to have free speech. You should be able to go out there and campaign on any issues unmolested, exactly as these MPs are saying, that people should be able to campaign without being intimidated. And yet they're the ones that are doing the main intimidation of what is essentially just their opposition, their political opposition. I mean, Tommy Robinson, this coming week, they are now going to take him to court again on Tuesday for contempt of court for the same charges that he was sent to prison for that then ended up being thrown out of court when he appealed it. And they've now going to take him back into court on Tuesday this week to try him again, which I think is a desperate attempt to try and prevent him from winning this EU election in the Northwest, because I think he does stand a very, very good chance of winning there. Max, what do you think about this law, this new law that they're intending to create here? I think it's just so hypocritical that they can't see that, you know, it's going to penalise them if it's applied equally.
Well, I think it's exactly as you say, that the politicians are just trying to create a privileged class that they belong to, where they can have protection, they can have additional protection from the law. They probably won't stop until they get a situation where every member of parliament has their own armed police bodyguard in order to prevent anybody from being able to attack them, so that they can say the most stupid things, they can support the most offensive legislation, they can do the most treasonous and treacherous things in parliament and know that they can still walk down the street or drive their car, etc., in the security that they have provided by the state. And yet ordinary members of the public won't be able to enjoy the same thing. I mean, one thing that's sort of struck me from what you were saying there was is the fact that morale within the police force is at an all-time low, and lots of police officers, I can remember speaking to a police officer only about 6 months ago, and this was an off-duty moment where this police officer was telling me that he really just couldn't wait to find something else that he could do so that he could actually leave the police force and go and do something else. And lots of police officers that I've spoken to have said that they're just just ticking off the days until they qualify for a pension, and then they're going to leave and have their pension, basically. And there was a case recently in the news of a police officer who'd used his vehicle to knock a criminal off of a moped. There have been all these moped crimes. I mean, these people are actually riding motor scooters, but there's all these crimes that have been committed in London where people ride around on motor scooters, riding on the pavement, driving past women and snatching their handbags, holding people up and then just riding off. And the police have recently introduced a tactic whereby officers that are trained drivers are able to just use their vehicle to knock these people off of the scooters so that they can be apprehended. There was a case in the news just this week of an officer who's been suspended for 2 years and on desk duty for 2 years because he had knocked somebody off of a scooter. And the person who had stolen the handbag and been knocked off the scooter hasn't been prosecuted, but he was prosecuted for, presumably, I can't remember exactly what the crime was he was prosecuted for, but he's had this sort of prosecution hanging over him for 2 years until eventually the courts have decided that no, that there isn't a case to answer and they're not going to proceed against him. And it's this kind of thing, which is exactly the same kind of thing that's happened within the army, where you have members of the parachute regiment that are now being, that are now in their 60s, who are being dragged before the courts to be prosecuted over things that happened in Northern Ireland 50 years or so ago. And so morale within the armed forces is very low as well. And I think that it's just creating a very bad atmosphere where you have these MPs who want to be part of a privileged class. They want to be able to go anywhere they want, say anything they want. But they also want the ability to stop other people from saying what they want, and also are very keen to turn a blind eye when people who they oppose politically are being attacked. But the moment that there's any threat against them, even if it is just an unkind word, that's far too much, they can't allow that, so they have to introduce a new law. Now, they're just hypocrites, really.
The police, I mean, they're just policy enforcers, basically, and the policy is now political correctness. That new tactic of bumping into the moped thieves, that's actually halved the amount of moped crime. And it's not just the police that aren't being backed up in this. As you say, you've got the military that are now facing charges for fighting against the IRA, for fighting against terrorists. We've got military that are facing charges for fighting in the war in Iraq and in Afghanistan. So it doesn't surprise me that this morale is really low, because they're more interested in prosecuting hate crimes. And one of the major guys behind this is Sadiq Khan, who has set up this special hate crime unit in London, and he's diverted resources away from actually solving crimes. They won't go out for burglaries anymore. They won't go out for shoplifting. They're just not interested. Not interested if people get mugged. Not interested if people get their bicycles stolen. They're told to track down the criminal themselves. And while this is going on, he's got his hate crime unit going. And of course, he's got 24-hour police protection, apparently. The mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, has 24-hour police protection after reported threats on social media. So not credible threats, just criticism on Twitter. In a three-month period last year, City Hall referred 17 cases to the police and 237 threats were made on social media, The Times reported. Khan said the abuse had gone from name-calling, trolling and threats to terrorism. He said, "I will not be cowed or bullied by these people, but you can't escape the fact that those close to me are worried. It can't be right that one of the consequences of me being the mayor of London and a Muslim in public life is that I have police protection." Well, you know, I mean, London is not a Muslim city. London is the capital city of Britain. The fact that there is a Muslim in charge of it, that shows that our country has been invaded. So I don't... You know, I can't see how he can imagine that it could be any other way than he would need police protection, because it's not like the rest of the country is very happy about that, like being ruled by a Muslim. It was Pakistan that were all cheering when he got his election results there. It wasn't the British people that were cheering. I can remember Paul Golding turning his back on him when he was on that stage, because he put himself up there for mayor as well. And a lot of these threats, apparently, they're not even coming from Britain. It's people that over in America that are disgusted at the things that Sadiq Khan says when he tries to insult Donald Trump and all the rest of it. So 237 of these so-called threats were made on social media, and yet he's got 24-hour police protection here. And do you want to say anything about Sadiq Khan before, because it sort of changes the subject on this next bit that I'm going to read, Max?
Well, I think the fact that he's a Muslim is irrelevant, really. You know, he's somebody that's in the public eye, and as I said earlier on, you know, he is one of the politicians that's created the divided society that we now live in. And And one of the aspects of that divided society is that people feel very strongly, and as you said earlier on, very often the only way that people can actually make their views known to a politician is by saying something, and the vast majority of people don't necessarily hold back when they decide that they want to insult a politician, because the politician has consistently stood for things that they find very objectionable, and just 200 or so unkind things said on social media. Well, you know, I don't really think that really justifies him needing to be protected. He says that it's these things have gone from name calling to trolling to threats to terrorism. Well, what terrorism has been directed against him? You know, have the police actually arrested anybody for a terrorist offence? Surely if somebody is committing acts of terrorism against Sadiq Khan, then there would be violent acts being committed, there would be people being attacked, there would be weapons involved, surely. And so surely the police would have already uncovered some evidence, some people would have been arrested, and there would be some evidence to substantiate a claim of terrorism, but there doesn't appear to be any evidence to substantiate this. And so, you know, I think really, in the absence of any evidence of that sort, we can't really do anything other than just to assume that what's been happening is name calling and hollow threats. And so it's a bit sort of pathetic, really, that he feels the need to have a bodyguard.
It just takes police away from doing what they should be doing, the same as his hate crime unit does. Dozens of MPs have said the Brexit crisis has led to them regularly receiving death and rape threats via social media. Well, why would people be upset and angry about Brexit then? Well, it's because the politicians haven't actually carried through on it. 3 years later, we're having the EU elections once again, and the fault for that lies squarely on their shoulders. they should have left on World Trade Organization terms. That's what we voted for. We didn't vote to do a deal. We voted to leave. As Nigel Farage has pointed out, what Theresa May has negotiated is a new treaty with the EU. She hasn't presented a deal to Parliament. She's presented a new treaty to them. So, of course, politicians have messed this up, and people are upset about that. So they get angry about it, and they type things on the keyboard. You know, 200 so-called threats on social media. I wonder how many threats Millennial Woes gets on social media. Or Mark Collett. I bet they get 200 or so threats as well, but they don't get a chance to go to the police about them. They just think, well, that's idiots. That's idiots. I'll just block them. Why doesn't Sadiq Khan try blocking these people that are threatening him or making threats? Because then he wouldn't even see them. He needn't have bothered the police with them. On Tuesday, West Midlands Police said they were investigating comments by Carl Benjamin, UKIP's candidate in the European elections, speculating about whether he would rape the MP Jess Phillips. And of course, we've gone into this before. I mean, basically, he said 3 years ago, he said, I wouldn't even rape you. So that's not a rape threat. That's saying that he wouldn't even rape her. And then he made a joke the other day on a video saying, well, he might if he was forced to. And he was just made, it was just a comedy routine. Just a comedy routine. And they're wasting the police's time with this. And trying to get them to arrest Carl Benjamin. And again, this is the intimidation of Carl Benjamin, who is standing in the EU elections. I don't think Jess Phillips is standing in the EU elections. So this law about this intimidation, the intimidation is of Carl Benjamin setting the police onto him for making a joke about an MP. Khan said there had been a rise in Islamophobia. Of course he would say that. Anti-Semitism and homophobia. But that he did not place the blame at the door of leavers. Well, why is he even mentioning the word leavers in that? Of course, he's trying to imply that it's to do with Brexiteers. However, he said it starts with name-calling, it can lead to criminal damage and graffiti, and ultimately to the situation where Joe Cox is murdered, or a terrorist can come to London and try to divide communities. Well, the guy that murdered Joe Cox, he had no presence online whatsoever. He certainly wasn't making death threat tweets to Sadiq Khan or to Joe Cox. So trying to draw a link there between the murder of Joe Cox and Twitter, there is no link. And terrorists don't come to London to try to divide communities. Terrorists come to London to try to blow up white people. Because they hate white people. Because the Quran says that if you're an infidel, if you're a kafir, you should be beheaded. That's why terrorists come to London. They don't come to try and divide communities. The communities are already divided because we are different races and we have different cultures. So you can't divide something that's already divided. I can never understand this narrative that these terrorists are trying to divide us. I mean, that is just absolutely ridiculous. You got anything else that you'd like to say on this, Max?
These female MPs, you know, most of whom are middle-aged, and so, you know, who's all best will in the world, they're not going to be at their prime. They're going to be past their best. And I would imagine if somebody was thinking of raping somebody, you know, a not too attractive middle-aged woman wouldn't necessarily be the first person they'd think of to, you know, be top of their list. So I think that there's perhaps even a degree of, wishful thinking on the part of these female MPs, rather than, you know, that they're hoping that they are still regarded as physically attractive enough to actually, for somebody to actually want to rape them, when in reality it's just absurd the thought that anybody is going to think, I'll vent my anger at society by going and raping an ugly woman. You know, I just find it almost impossible to visualise anybody thinking like that, to be quite honest. So, again, I think that these are things that are just grossly over-exaggerated and obviously nothing to be taken serious, I don't think.
It's like Diane Abbott. I mean, she was convinced that there's somebody out there with pictures of Diane Abbott all over their room and they're fantasising about raping her. It's just absolutely crazy. Plus, I mean, you're saying there these middle-aged female feminist MPs, they clearly don't understand the internet. I mean, there's lots of exaggeration on the internet. There's lots of bad language, lots of racial slurs. I mean, that's just the way people are. You know, people make jokes as well. And I mean, I can remember when I was at school, we had all these jokes that were dead baby jokes. I mean, that's pretty gross, but you know, people found them funny. People do make obscene jokes, and you know, rape can be a part of an obscene joke. I can remember that at school, there was jokes about it. It's just the way that people are, especially the younger type of people. So I think a lot of these MPs are just completely cut off from the general public. They're completely cut off from internet culture. They take jokes as if they're threats. They take these things seriously that people say, as if, you know, as if it's somebody standing there out on the street with a megaphone pronouncing it, and that's actually the platform that they're wanting to stand on to be elected to Parliament. No, it's not. It's just people making jokes. And while they're getting all excited about this and trying to make a law and giving Sadiq Khan police protection, we've actually got non-whites who are making horrific threats against white people, and multiple credible death threats, and they're just walking free from court with no jail time whatsoever. And this is quite a famous case. There's been a lot of people talking about this on Twitter over the weekend. A brown anti-white racist makes multiple credible death threats and walks from court with no jail time. A brown-skinned man told theatre staff he hated English pigs and he was ready to hurt men, women and children in the audience. Raihan Ali, 23, also threatened to get a gun after showing up at the Royal Shakespeare Theatre in Stratford-upon-Avon on August 30th. Prosecutor Edward Hollingsworth said Mr. Ali told security staff who spoke to him that he had gone there to hurt someone, saying he was going to take a knife into the theatre, and talking of white people and Asians as scum. He ranted that he hated the English and was going to get a gun and kill English pigs. When police arrived and arrested him, Ali called one of the officers a racist white C-word. A witness said Ali threatened if anyone went near him, whether they were a man, a woman or a child, he would hurt them. I mean, it's just a catalogue of offences there. And if that had been a white man that had started making these threats to anyone non-white, I mean, he would have been whisked off to prison so fast. I mean, you wouldn't have seen him go. He'd just be gone, and he'd be locked up for years. And yet, this guy has walked free. And it didn't stop there. Ali had been to court on the day he showed up to the theatre after abusing staff at Warwick Hospital on June the 4th last year. On that occasion, he threatened to rape a man's wife and kill his children, and then called one of the police officers who arrested him English scum and white bastard. He also called a security guard at the hospital a paki and said he was not a true Muslim. The court also heard on March 15th this year he racially abused his probation worker while subject to a community order for earlier racially aggravated public order offences. He is said to have told him, "I'm not scared of you, I'm going to come next week and sort you out, you effing black bastard." Ali also called a 999 call handler a white bitch after she recognised his voice, after he made 9 calls to emergency services on May the 2nd. I mean, this does sound like somebody who would be better off locked up, don't you think, Max, rather than wandering about there among the public?
Yeah, this sounds like somebody who really shouldn't actually be in our country. And this, again, I refer back to what I said earlier on, that politicians have created a divided society. And this person wouldn't be walking through the streets of Britain racially abusing the good people of this country if somebody hadn't let him in. And by the sound of things, going around abusing people in the way that he does, I doubt very much that he's employed, or if he is employed, well, what sort of work must he be doing? But I can't imagine that he is actually of any use to this country or provides any service to the people of this country whatsoever. So, you know, why on earth would somebody like him be allowed into this country? And this is why we need a sane immigration policy, and we need to have our borders properly patrolled, and we need to have an immigration system that sorts out those people who are going to be of benefit to us as a nation and allows those people to come in, and who decides who is an obvious bad egg and sends them back where they came from. And in terms of the potential for somebody to cause problems in this country, if you allow lots of people into a country who are of a different ethnic or racial group to the host population, which this Mr. Ali obviously is, then those people, the dynamics of a multicultural society automatically create competition between the different ethnic groups, which then causes the rivalry, which then causes the ill feeling, and which then eventually manifests itself in hatred towards other groups. And the one way of having a society that's free from racial hatred is to have a society in which there is just the indigenous racial group, the indigenous British people here in this country, and then all this that ill feeling, all of these problems, all of these offences that are being committed, all of these threats, they would just not occur at all. They just wouldn't materialise, because we would be one people living in a country in harmony with each other. And that's really what we should aim for.
That's the thing, isn't it? I mean, all of this wouldn't even be occurring if we just had white British people here. There'd be none of this. There'd be no Sadiq Khan running London. There'd be no police having to surround him. There'd be no special hate crimes unit, because there wouldn't be any hate crimes. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous that all the amount of effort and resources that he's put into trying to hold a multicultural system together, because each culture is trying its hardest to get away from the other culture, and you've got friction between the two, or three, or four, or five, or however many it is. You've got people that can't understand the language, can't understand English, don't understand body language. Then you've got all the crime that's associated with it, and then you've got to try and cover up all the crime. I mean, it is literally using up all the resources that we have trying to hold this unnatural state of affairs together here. I mean, you could make a point that maybe this guy's got Tourette's syndrome. Maybe he's got Tourette's. I mean, it does sound to me like he's got some kind of mental problem here, where he cannot help being offensive to people. And if that is the case, he should still be going to prison. I know of a white man that's got Tourette's, and he's been sent to prison for 10% of this, for this sort of language, but to blacks, and he's been sent to prison multiple times, and sent back to prison for breaking his bail for similar things to this. And yet this guy, because he's black, he's completely let off. A court allowed him to walk free yesterday, despite the threats he made, after he admitted three racially aggravated offences, two of causing fear of violence, and one of causing alarm or distress. See, now, it can't just be Tourette's, because he's making physical threats to people. He's threatening to rape people. He's threatening to kill people. He's not just using racial slurs. He's making all these threats here as well. He's just been allowed to walk free. Judge Anthony Potter gave him a 12-month prison sentence, suspended for 2 years, and ordered him to carry out 80 hours of unpaid work and to take part in a rehabilitation activity for up to 30 days. The judge told Ali, who lives in supported accommodation, sending you to prison would interfere with the care package which is in place. So it's more important to this judge to look after the offender than it is to look after the people that he's offending against. You think of all the victims in this, all the people that have been threatened that they were going to be raped, threatened that they were going to be killed and insulted. He's not thinking about them at all, and he's not thinking about any potential people in the future that this guy could threaten and maybe go so far as to assault. All he's thinking about is the welfare of the person that's in the dock, because he's black. And that's exactly what he says. Sending you to prison would interfere with the care package which is in place. So regardless of how this non-white is going to interfere in the lives of everybody else in society, that doesn't matter a thing to him. And it's things like this that really wake people up. I mean, we get told, oh, it's you podcasters, you're radicalizing people. No, we're not. You know, the mainstream media does all the radicalizing for us, and then people come and find us.
And so there was this contradiction between, on the one hand, the MPs that we've just been discussing, who are claiming that they've had physical threats and rape threats made to them over the internet, and they feel motivated to introduce new legislation in order to protect themselves. And yet we've got this situation where this man's going around making similar threats into people's faces. And I'm not, this is not something that he's doing over the internet in a situation where all they've got to do is to flick a switch on their computer to turn the whole thing off and just go away and do something else, stay in the comfort of their own home and the safety of their own home. These are people that are actually face-to-face with this man who's making these threats. And yet, as you say, the judge is letting him walk away. And it can only be because, in this instance, he's a black man and a brown man, and so therefore they're making allowances for him.
Yeah, it's not okay to make threats on paper or on a screen to the politicians, but it's perfectly fine to actually make physical threats to women, children, members of a hospital, members of a theatre, police, all these people here. I mean, the hypocrisy is just astounding. That these politicians can think that they have any kind of moral high ground in complaining about intimidation from people over their policies. It's their policies, after all, which causes people to get so upset. Well, let's move on to this EU election here, and also Nigel Farage. Now, I spoke a bit about Nigel Farage the other day, about what a narcissist he was, with his Brexit party, how he's stabbed UKIP in the back, and he's split the vote. And I said a lot of bad things about him, which I do stand by. But at the same time, at least he is an alternative to the mainstream. And I watched him today on Andrew Marr, and he did a fantastic job in this interview. I mean, he is a really, really great orator. It's just such a shame that he calls the people that support him Nazis and far right, and attacked Anne-Marie Waters and all her supporters, and attacks Gerald Batten and attacks Tommy Robinson. And that is just so infuriating that he does that. At the same time, he is doing really well with his Brexit party. He's doing fantastically well. So well, in fact, that he's actually beaten the Conservatives in a general election poll for the first time ever. This report comes from The Telegraph. The Brexit Party has overtaken the Conservatives in national polling for the first time. Remember, they overtook the Conservatives in the EU poll. I think the Brexit Party had about 30% and the Conservatives were on about 14%. Well, this is a general election poll. This is for if there was a proper election, not just for the EU. He would beat the Conservatives, with Nigel Farage predicted to win 49 seats in a general election. A bombshell poll reveals. A Comres survey found that if a general election campaign led by Theresa May took place now, it would put the Tories on course for their worst result in history, apparently confirming the fears of Conservative MPs and activists in uproar over the Prime Minister's handling of Brexit. Labour would become the largest party by a margin of 137 seats, allowing Jeremy Corbyn to lead a minority government as the Tories fell to third place in terms of vote share. Brandon Lewis, the party chairman, Penny Mordaunt, the defence secretary, and Matt Hancock, the health secretary, would be among 46 Tories to lose their seats to the Brexit party just 1 month after its launch, according to predictions based on the poll commissioned by Brexit Express. Boris Johnson, Ian Duncan Smith and Sir Graham Brady, the chairman of the 1922 committee, would be ousted by Labour, with the Tories retaining support from less than half of those who voted for them in 2017. The poll found that the Conservatives would fall to fourth place in the European Parliament elections on May 23rd, with the Brexit Party gaining the highest share. The survey is likely to be seized on by the growing numbers of Tory MPs publicly calling for Mrs. May to stand down. And the Brexit Express is a campaign group run by Jeremy Hosking, a major Tory donor who has now given £200,000 to Mr. Farage's party. And this Brexit party, they're the new Conservatives. I think they are the new Conservatives. They're taking up that role that the Conservative Party should have been fulfilling and is no longer fulfilling. And I think when it comes to a general election, we could see a huge win for them. And I know I've criticised Nigel Farage before, but you know, I still want to see him there in the EU Parliament. I am enjoying seeing him on the television. As I say today, he did a fantastic job. All they wanted to do was look at things that he'd said in the past. They didn't want to talk about anything that's going on now. He was saying the big conversation at the moment is that there is no democracy left in Britain because of the failure to carry out Brexit. And that is what all the talk is about. If only he would stop stabbing everyone else in the back, you know, he would be great. I mean, really, we should have Farage with UKIP, with For Britain, with Tommy Robinson, all of them together. You know, they would win everything. We would have our populist party, but they won't do it. They've all got their egos in the way. They won't work with one another. Farage will call them all far right. But it's still going to be a win for us, I think, when the Brexit Party trounces everybody else at these EU elections. I know you've been watching him this week as well, Max, haven't you? You said something about seeing him on Question Time, because I heard he did quite well there too.
Yeah, I did see him on Question Time, and yes, he did do quite well there again. I just find Nigel Farage a bit of an enigma, really, in that you know, he talks about how this new Brexit party that he's formed is going to, is going to break the current British political system and bring about a revolutionary change, and yet he seems to have the support of the of our current political establishment, and he seems to have the support of our media, certainly, because, you know, he's on television all the time. If he, if you think back to the days when, for example, the BNP were at their height, it was very, very difficult for anybody in the BNP to ever get on television. The only way that somebody in the BNP would ever get on television, if it was going to be a smear program that had been produced by, you know, one of the TV channels, and then they would get on television and they would be presented in the worst possible light. Even when they tried to get onto Question Time, they were constantly being told, "Oh no, you don't have anybody elected at national level, so therefore you can't participate in Question Time." And it took until the BNP had got two MEPs elected before they were allowed their one and only opportunity to appear on Question Time, and that was a completely set up situation where the audience was packed full of people who were extremely hostile to Nick Griffin, and he performed very very badly as a consequence. And yet Nigel Farage last Thursday put in his 33rd apparently appearance on Question Time, he's on television virtually every day. And you have to think to yourself, in view of the news blackout that there was for people in the BNP during the BNP's height, and when we look at the current treatment of UKIP, where UKIP are now being treated in the same way that the BNP were treated in the past, and there is a virtual news blackout, unless somebody within UKIP does something really stupid which reflects badly on the party, they don't seem to get into the news nowadays. Gerard Batten doesn't seem to appear on Question Time, even though he's the leader of a party that's got, two or three Euro MPs left, because most of them have gone with Nigel Farage into Nigel Farage's Brexit Party. And although I think the Brexit Party have got, you know, can claim half a dozen or so MEPs, and so therefore that, you know, perhaps playing on that in order to justify their inclusion in Question Time, as we stand at the moment, they haven't got a single person elected. So whilst on the one hand I agree with you, I like a lot of the things that Nigel Farage says. I think he's a great performer in front of the camera. I think he's a great performer on the stage. When he's making speeches in the street, he's a great performer. When he makes speeches in the European Parliament, he's a great performer. And in all those respects, you've got to admire the man, and you've got to admire his ability to garner a lot of support, because lots of people are joining his party by all accounts, and a fairly substantial number of donors have come forward and have donated very substantial amounts of money to his party by all accounts. But you have to compare and contrast the news blackout that was applied to a nationalist political party, the news blackout that is now being applied to UKIP, and the plentiful supply of media opportunities, media appearances that are afforded to Nigel Farage. And you have to wonder why that is. And in fact, when Nigel Farage isn't involved in politics, and when he isn't actually fulfilling his duties in the European Parliament, he's a radio broadcaster for LBC Radio, and you have to wonder, you know, why a media organisation like that, that wouldn't give the same opportunity to anybody else who ostensibly believes what Nigel Farage ostensibly believes, and then you have to wonder why they provide that opportunity for Nigel Farage to broadcast his views when they wouldn't do it otherwise. It just creates this question in your mind. And so on the one hand, he's doing lots of great things. Yes, he seems to be galvanizing people. I think we need a solid vote in support of Brexit at these European elections. But on the other hand, you know, why is Nigel Farage given this sort of kid gloves treatment by the media? And that's the thing we've got to that we need to think about.
He's favoured opposition. That's the way I would say it. I would say that he's favoured opposition. I wouldn't go so far as to say that he's controlled opposition, because I do think he believes in what he's doing. I think the man does have integrity. He believes in his cause. I mean, he showed that with all the campaigning to leave the EU. But he is certainly the favoured opposition. He's the man that the newspapers want people to vote for, because he is backed by the bankers. He's not calling for the more extreme things like getting rid of political correctness, stopping immigration, stopping Islamification like UKIP are nowadays. So he's favoured opposition. He's definitely favoured. But he always has been. I mean, he as you were saying, he's favoured over the BNP, wasn't he?
But also, interestingly, on a radio appearance that he did recently, I can't quite think where it was now, but on a radio appearance that he did quite recently, he did mention the Jewish lobby in the United States. I think he was being interviewed for an American radio program. And that's normally the sort of things that would have the campaign against anti-Semitism screaming from their high towers. And yet he was able to say that. And he's still employed by LBC Radio, which was founded and which is owned ultimately by a Jewish individual. And so therefore, you have to, you know, he seems to be able to do things that other people can't do. And you have to just, in my view, you just have to, it raises a question over, you know, whether he is, you know, you're saying that he's favoured opposition. He seems to be very favoured opposition, but on the other hand, I think we do need, at the forthcoming European elections, we do need a strong vote in favour of people who are advocating Brexit. And so I think that I suppose really I'm torn on the one hand in the direction of Nigel Farage, because I think he probably will get the strongest showing, certainly if the opinion polls that we've seen are to be believed. But on the other hand, I would also like to see UKIP doing well. So I would like people to cast their vote for UKIP. What I feel, though, is that these European elections are going to be viewed by some people as kind of like the second referendum by proxy. Tony Blair has already said that this is not a vote to choose a prime minister or a government. Is a vote for the Farage Brexit or against it. And I think that on the one hand, if the pro-Brexit parties do very well, what it will do is it will put the fear up the Remain MPs, and it will probably cause a larger proportion of them to agree to support Theresa May's dog's breakfast of a Brexit. And so that Theresa May's deal may actually get through Parliament if it's presented again, which would then mean that we would have the worst of all outcomes. We'd have Theresa May's dog's breakfast instead of either remaining in the European Union or us getting out with a clean break Brexit. But on the other hand, if we have a poor showing at the European elections, it will tend to strengthen the belief in the minds of the Remain MPs that they are correct, and they will press even harder for then a second referendum, and that will then just extend this sort of Brexit agony, and we'll have another sort of couple of months long campaign before another referendum is held, during which time this sort of operation scare, or whatever they call it, this
Operation Fear. Operation Fear, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, this propaganda campaign to put the fear into everybody, to make them feel that if they do actually vote for a clean break Brexit, it will be the end of the world. You know, that will start up all over again. So, on the one hand, as I say, I'm torn in two directions with regard to Nigel Farage, as to, you know, whether he is actually the genuine article as far as saviour of the nation is concerned, or whether he is actually somebody who is just being used by the establishment for a purpose that isn't yet completely clear. And I'm also torn in two directions with regard to these upcoming European elections, as to, you know, whether a really strong pro-Brexit showing would actually be in our interests, or whether it wouldn't, because I think that if we have a genuine second referendum following a poor showing for the pro-Brexit parties in the European elections, then it gives the media a second opportunity to produce, or an opportunity to produce a different result this time. And my suspicions are that they probably would take that opportunity, and they would press for a vote to remain.
Well, the newspapers all supported Brexit, didn't they? That was the thing. The newspapers all supported Brexit, but I think with most of the newspapers, I should say, maybe
yeah,
Daily Mail didn't. Most of them did.
Brexit. But whether they would support it again is the other thing. You know, my belief is that Brexit was a ploy used by Zionists in order to divert the attention of the European Union away from what Israel is doing on the West Bank and what Israel is doing in Gaza. What we can see now is a situation where the media are again building up Nigel Farage and creating further controversy in the European Union at a time when Donald Trump is sailing aircraft carriers through the Suez Canal on their way to Iran, there's lots of saber-rattling going on out there. So I just wonder whether, you know, this again is being used as a smokescreen in order to distract public attention away from the sort of things that Zionists don't want people to focus on, and to focus on something which, at the end of the day, will have no adverse consequences for them.
I think Nigel Farage, I don't think he's controlled opposition, but we'll see once he gets voted in, because what he has said is, if they win, and they win with a landslide, he's going to demand that Brexit Party members have a say in the negotiations with Brexit. So if we see that they do win, and he then pushes for that, then you'll know that he's genuine. If he doesn't, then you'll know that he was controlled in some way. And if he was to be saying that he was against immigration, he was against Islam, and then he got in and then he turned his back on that, then I would say that he's controlled opposition. But I think he's favoured opposition. And at the moment, he's in the polls, he's getting 35%, which is more than the Conservative Party and the Labour Party both together. So that shows you how strong the feeling is in Britain. It's just a rejection of the mainstream parties. And I think if people have got a good candidate like Carl Benjamin in their area in the southwest, or if they've got Mark Meacham in Scotland and they're able to vote for them, then they should do. If you've got Tommy Robinson and you're able to vote for Tommy Robinson, then I think you should vote for Tommy Robinson. If you're in an area where the UKIP candidate really isn't that good, then vote for Nigel Farage, I guess. At least it's not any of these mainstream parties. And I really do hope we get all of them in there. I want to see Tommy Robinson in there. I want to see Carl Benjamin in there. I want to see Mark Meacham in there. And I want to see Nigel Farage in there. And I want to see them in there raising hell. I want to see them joining up with Salvini and Marine Le Pen and Orban and all the rest of them, just so that we have a huge populist alliance that manages to put a spoke in the wheels of the EU. That's what I want to see happen. And that's what I think is possibly going to happen. And what's the National Front, the something national, the Race National or something Marine Le Pen's party is now called, they are doing better than Macron's party in France. They're the ones that are leading in France. So this EU election really is a chance for people to vote for the populist parties and get them into power, get them to have an alliance together, and make changes to this legislation. That's what it's all about. So it's good and it's bad, but really I think, you know, as I said at the beginning of the show, it's really a win-win situation for us. If we leave on WTO terms, we would have benefited from that, and now we're having these EU elections, we're benefiting from that too, because it means that all these populist parties are getting exposure, well, apart from UKIP.
Yeah, one of the things that I also saw this week was this program, which was called Brexit Behind Closed Doors, which was very interesting. I think it was a Belgian filmmaker who followed Guy Verhofstadt around. He was leading, together with Michel Barnier, he was one of the leading lights of the European Union's negotiating team. And it was and he filmed them behind the scenes. He filmed them on occasions when they were relaxing, or when just before they were going to be going into a meeting, or when they'd only just come out of a meeting, and he filmed them while they were watching news reports of what Theresa May was saying on television. And there were some very interesting things that were said, which illustrates the attitude of the European Union towards Britain. And I mean, in particular, one of the things that I picked up on was Michel Barnier was talking about restoring an old car, because Guy Verhofstadt has got a vintage Aston Martin, and Barnier said at one point, that's what they're trying to do with Brexit, that's what the British are trying to do with Brexit, take an old car and restore it. So that's again a kind of a sneer at the fact that we have got we are a diminished power as far as world power status is concerned. But he also then, there was also a brief a statement by a number of people saying that they wanted to get rid of Britain, that they were hoping that they could have got rid of Britain in March 2019. And then there were these two chaps whose names I didn't make a note of, but they were laughing to each other saying, get rid of them, we kicked them out. And so this is the way that they were laughing behind closed doors about Britain. And one of them, after they'd said this, you know, we've kicked them out, one of them said, we finally turned them into a colony, and that was our plan from the very first moment.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
This is a reflection of Theresa May's dog Brexit of a deal. Yeah. You know, that if we accept that deal, then as far as the European Union are concerned, they regard us as a colony. And that was their plan from the very first moment. I think that's a very, very telling statement from that programme.
I think he's been called out calling the people that Britain's stupid and all sorts of things. And he's been campaigning alongside Vince Cable. And I think programmes like that, you know, it just shows the general public exactly what the EU are like. I think if they were to have another referendum, everybody would still vote to leave, but there would be far more people voting to leave now than there ever was before, because we've seen what they're like. We've had 3 years of seeing what the EU are really like. I mean, we knew this before because we took an interest in politics, but I mean, you cannot avoid it now. It's been on the news every day. The inner workings of the EU and how it affects Britain, and how they've refused to let us leave, how the politicians that are elected to serve us, how they're traitors and they're doing the EU's bidding. All of that has been laid open for the whole country to see, which is why everyone is so furious, and why 35% of the people that are going to vote for in this EU election are supporting the Brexit Party. Then you've got another 4% or 7% that are going to be supporting UKIP. I mean, that's a huge majority of people that are saying we are sick to death of all these other parties. We want a change. And if they were to have another referendum, I think it would just be much, much higher now with people that want to leave. So it's all up in the air, all very exciting stuff. We'll continue covering it here at Aerian Britannia. Thank you very much for coming on today, Max. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next week with more Aerian Britannia for you. And of course, we do hope you have a great week ahead of you.
Radio Aerian, for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAerian.com.